Hi guys, it's TJ. Welcome to New Zealand Mysteries. In this case, we're looking at the sad and bizarre death of Keo Matsuzawa in Auckland, New Zealand. Thanks for joining me. For those of you who do not know a lot about Auckland, Auckland is called Tamaki Makaurau in Māori. It is a large metropolitan city in the North Island of New Zealand, the most populous urban area in the country. Auckland has an urban population of about 1,463,000 people as of June 2021. And if you look at this map to the right here, this is where it's situated. So first, we're actually going to look into the cold case series sort of outline of the case. This is at police.govt.nz, and anyone can actually go there, and I'm going to leave links in the description box of everything we visit so that you can take a look for yourself. So we're going to go over this. It's a kind of brief layout of the case, but it leads us into it and we'll explore it further. Japanese woman Keo Matsuzawa came to New Zealand in 1997 to study English in Christchurch, to work and travel. On 11th of September 1998, she flew to Auckland City and checked into her backpackers on Fort Street before heading out to explore the city that afternoon. She never returned to the backpackers. 11 days later, her naked and decomposing body was found in a small room off the stairwell in the Centre Court building in Queen Street. Police believe 29-year-old Keo had only been in the city for several hours before she met her killer. The last sighting of the young woman was from security camera footage outside the BNZ Bank in Queen Street, shortly after she had checked into a downtown backpackers in Fort Street. Both the bank and backpackers are close to the Centre Court building where Keo's body was found. And we will look at some maps later that I've found. Police think Keo may have been targeted by a man who was approached her that afternoon. It is possible this man may have spiked her drink. Police want to hear from anyone if this sort of predatory behaviour from the 90s in Auckland sounds familiar. For the first time, police have revealed that unknown male DNA material was located under Keo's fingernails. Although Keo's passport was recovered from a public rubbish bin close to where her body was discovered, her clothes and jewellery have never been found. Keo was wearing black bootleg pants, a black jacket, black shoes, and carrying a backpack. She had crescent-shaped earrings and a small delicate gold ring with a single pink stone. Do you have any information about these items? So that gives us a brief rundown of the case. And we're going to look at some more information. So as you can see on this one here, the Queen Street Backpackers, Centre Court, and the BNZ are all really in a sort of two-block radius, and around here was the rubbish bin where some of her stuff was found. If you haven't already, please give this video a thumbs up. It helps with the algorithm and it helps more people to see the video, which is what we want. We want as many people to see it as possible. That's the only way we're going to try and get some answers. Now, this here is a website I found which has a fantastic story, in-depth story about this. So matthewtaylor.co.nz. I want to give a shout out to Matthew Taylor for writing this. He's done an amazing job. And he wrote this in 2018. So let's take a look. And he's got some really nice photos of Keo, which we haven't seen before, so I find that really nice. 29-year-old Japanese tourist Keo Matsuzawa was a daughter, younger sister, flatmate, friend, and if she were alive today, would have been an aunt. She went missing from Auckland, New Zealand 20 years ago, and 11th September 98. Her body was found in a utility cupboard in a stairwell 11 days later on the 22nd of September. So Cold Case is a program in New Zealand which featured the case which we just read from, and apparently there's been another article or another program that's covered it called The Investigator by Brian Bruce, which I haven't seen. So it says here that it's available on YouTube. If I can find it, I will also link that in the description box below for you guys. Let's look at the timeline and the map. Friday, 11th September 98, approximately midday, Kaya arrived in Auckland on flight AN626. At 2:14 p.m., security camera footage shows Kaya getting off an airport bus on Queen Street, checks into Queen Street Backpackers. 3:32 p.m., BNZ CCTV shows Kaya walking past the Countrywide building on Queen Street. Apparently, implied by the investigator show, the access card records were missing. Monday, 14th September 98, Kaya due to check out of hostel. Wednesday, 16th of September, reported as 5 days after Kaya went missing. Kaya's day bag, passport and insurance papers are found in a rubbish bin. On Tuesday, the 22nd of September 98, Kaya's body was found. One person of interest leaves the country. I guess this is a bigger map of the one that we've seen before. Kaya's family were worried about her going to New Zealand. Her plan was to learn English here for a year, and she left Yamagata, Japan for New Zealand in November 97. In Christchurch, she enrolled at the Dominion English School. She also worked in a restaurant. At the school, she met her friend Naomi, who she flattered and travelled New Zealand with, including visiting Queenstown. Naomi said she was such a happy, cheerful person, never said a bad word about anyone. We'd go shopping together and to any events that were on in Christchurch. We went to the Santa Parade and got so sunburnt, a friend said she had never seen such dark Japanese people before. Kaya sent postcards back home regularly. Around August, she sent her mother a postcard. It said, "Dear Mum, happy birthday. I've decided to come home to Japan on November 4th, so another 3 months to go. Take care. Love, Kaya." Kaya's mum said that she had a lot of friends and she'd make anyone around her happy. She said, "I can't describe how kind and how nice she was. She was very friendly and she talked to most people. She wasn't shy about meeting new people." Kaya told Naomi about her plans to travel to the North Island. She wanted to visit the Bay of Islands for 5 days and visit Auckland. Naomi couldn't afford to go with her. Kaya promised to send her a postcard. In the investigator documentary, Brian Bruce said that Kaya didn't like travelling on her own and a police officer described her as a young, weary tourist. Kaya's mother said the following to Brian Bruce after being asked about her naivety. Brian said, "In English we have a word naive. It means to be so innocent that you do not appreciate that people could be actually meaning you harm. That she would take people, as we say, on face value. She would tend to trust people." Through a translator, she said, "That's right, she would never mistrust a person." Naomi said she was the kind of person who would make friends with anyone. It wouldn't be an issue for her to make friends at the backpackers and go out with people she just met. I think this could be the reason it happened. After 10 days, no postcard came, so I did start to wonder. The police showed up at my work and drove me to the station. That's where they told me, but I already knew by then it must be Kaya. Other friends described her as kind and she could speak English very well and reported that she didn't take drugs. One postcard she sent from New Zealand to her brother read, "Thank you so much for your support when I left. It's much colder here than expected, but it's such a beautiful place. Everyone here is so kind. I will probably not get killed. I'd better get going now. Please don't do too much overtime at work and take good care of yourself." It seems that they are very ominous words. Queen Street Backpackers. So Kaya arrived in Auckland City by bus around 2:14 p.m. And apparently this is footage of her getting off the bus from the airport. Kaya paid for and checked into a single room on the second floor of Queen Street Backpackers for 3 nights on the 11th of September. She spoke to staff and set up her room in a neat, orderly fashion. Then she left her room for what was likely the last time. At the time, there was a travel centre across the road. She was last photographed on CCTV at 3:32 p.m. walking past the Countrywide building on Queen Street. The 11th of September was a Friday afternoon, and soon people would be on Queen Street making their way home or having drinks after work. Let's talk about the fire alarm tester. Dennis was a fire alarm compliance tester who on the 22nd of September had just finished up servicing the system at the Auckland City Library, then went to the Centre Court building's utility room where the fire panel was. He discovered Kayo's body. He told Cold Case, "The first smell that I was aware of was a smell of ammonia. Then it became a real vile smell. At first he thought Kayo's naked body was a mannequin. He went down the stairs to Queen Street and used his phone to call the police. He said, I had a darn good look at the body because I thought I might be called as a witness later on." Let's look at the buildings. The Centre Court building in central Auckland at 131 Queen Street is 6 stories high. It shares a stairwell with the old BNZ building beside it. From the backpackers, turning right into then turning left into Queen Street off of Fort Street brings you to the Centre Court building after a 2-minute walk. The primary tenant in the Centre Court building was Key Education, an English language school with mainly Asian students on the second floor, and the investigator is described as a Japanese language school. The shared stairwell is a confusing maze of stairs and doors. There was access to it from a car park, the Centre Court Food Court, QF Tavern, which is a bar or pub, and presumably each floor in the Centre Court and BNZ buildings. The Centre Court car park was accessible from a roller door entrance around the back of the building on Mills Lane. From the car park, there are lifts that go up through the building and the stairwell. Down one flight of stairs is the corridor where the utility room is, and there's another car park one level down. The door on the left of the utility room corridor is the fire exit stairwell for the BNZ building. So these are stairs from the level of the utility cupboard, the corridor leading to the utility room. From the BNZ stairwell down one floor is an exit to Queen Street. Brian Bruce points out there is an alarm PIR beside the door, and it's unclear if it was there in 98 or at what times it was armed. Down one floor is a door to the BNZ food court. Up one floor is the BNZ car park, and then other BNZ tower floors. So Queen Street stairwell exit and the entrance to the stairwell on Queen Street. The utility room. Kayo hadn't been reported missing when her body was found. Kayo's fingerprints were matched to fingerprints on her belongings left in her hostel room. Dental records from Japan and in-person family identification were also used. Kayo's cause of death remains unknown because of the time that passed between her death and her body being found. The room Kayo was found in is described in various ways. An alarm room, probably because there was writing on the door that the fire alarm panel was in the room. It's probably also accurately described as a small utility room or a stairwell cupboard. It may have been a room that firefighters would need to access if they were called to the building. The room could be opened easily using a screwdriver, and that's how Dennis gained access, as the building manager was difficult to find keys and they were not given out readily. The door to the room was designated a smoke control door and had an auto closer on it. When Bruce was filming his documentary 9 years later, there was no way to hold the door open without using another item. The room was dark and the light switch was in an unusual location. Brian Bruce in his show notes that the room was chosen by the murderer over potentially more discreet methods of hiding Kayo's body. For example, using a vehicle parked in the attached car park to transport the body to another location. He uses this to support his theory that the person did not have access to a vehicle. It's possible that they did have access to a vehicle but saw moving the body as a risk. either, because they might have been seen in the car park, pulled over with the body in their vehicle, or left forensic evidence behind in their vehicle. They chose not to move the body, even though it's likely they returned to the room to clean up. Apparently, building access records were missing for two periods of time, and some of KO's belongings were disposed of days later. There were probably rubbish bins in the building, and they also chose not to use. There was a roof area, or even moving KO's body from the building in a suitcase or another container. KO only weighed 50 kilos, which is about 110 pounds. So she was pretty light. Let's talk about a theory and building access. The original investigation appears to have focused on who had access to the buildings connected to the stairwell and checking their alibis. This numbered in the hundreds of people who worked across the two buildings, as well as controlled access, including from the building car park, which was controlled by DKS, which is Data Key System. The stairwell was accessible to the public via the Centre Court Food Court and the tavern. Centre Court tenants reported that people often accessed the stairwell without a swipe cards. Toilets and public areas were messy after the weekends, and the bar downstairs had a fire exit into the stairwell where patrons went to smoke. Police want to hear from anyone who was in the Centre Court building over the time KO went missing and noticed anything unusual. This was Brian Bruce's theory in his documentary, stating the murderer must have had security access to the building. The Mills Lane car park was described as one of two ways you can get into the building. A DKS key was required to enter or exit using the car park roller door. And one part of the investigation that was not mentioned in the cold case documentary was the missing building access records. Some of the doors to the Centre Court and BNZ buildings were controlled by DKS and Cardiac Access Control Systems. Access control records for each system are stored in two separate physical locations across both buildings. Records for certain times on the weekend that KO was murdered are missing. One of the computers is hidden away in another utility cupboard in the Centre Court building. The other cardiac system computer is in the BNZ Tower Management Office. The cardiac system prints paper records that were also missing. The investigator implies the dates that the records are missing are Friday 11 September 98 and Monday 14 September 98. DNA. Police revealed on August 2018 episode of Cold Case that using DNA testing, they had found male DNA under Kayo's fingernails. Police would be able to compare it to DNA sample taken from a male suspect. People of interest. Dennis, the fire alarm tester, was initially a person of interest but was ruled out by police. His movements as part of his job were electronically monitored. Language school associate. One person of interest was associated with the Centre Court Language School. The timings of the alibi didn't check out, but the police later concluded that this was due to an honest mistake. Then there was the British serial killer. Around 2000, it was reported that Alan Michael Grimson, who in 2001 was convicted of killing two young men in England, was based at the Devonport Naval Base Fire School in Auckland, New Zealand, as a trainer at the time of KO's murder. Graham Osborne, manager of the fire alarm maintenance company responsible for the Centre Court building, Wormald, said he had met Grimson a few times at the fire school and that there was no reason for Grimson to have known about the Centre Court building. Detective Senior Sergeant Kevin Baker observed that Grimson appeared to have targeted young men. Police suspect that Grimson trawled nightclubs for victims and that there are more unknown victims who may have been murdered on December 12th of various years. Ukrainian backpacker resident. Another person of interest was a Ukrainian man who was a long-term resident at the Queen Street Backpackers. He was described as eccentric, paranoid, and with a mental health history. He matched a description that a witness gave that they saw an older chap with a dishevelled look walking with an Asian female. The witness thought the Asian female could have been KO. This man left the country on the day KO's body was found. He dealt in second-hand jewellery and had pawned jewellery in Australia that matched the description of KO's missing jewellery. Police say they tracked down the jewellery that he pawned and conclusively eliminated it as being Kaya's jewellery. 2 years later, he was found by French police squatting in an airport and triggered an Interpol alert. He was extradited back to NZ and an officer spent 2 days interviewing him. The officer explains why the man was ruled out. He said, "My gut instinct is that it wasn't him. A guy with a clear mental health history was the kind of person who would have been able to approach KO, strike up a conversation and entice her into a stairwell." Question. The newest suspect. Around 2018, another district advised Auckland police of a potential person of interest. The district is not necessarily in New Zealand. Police say that he looks really good as a suspect. Bank records show that this person used the FPOS or ATM card at the Queen Street's BNZ building ATM on the same afternoon that KO arrived. From the emphasis placed on it, the cold case documentary, it's likely this person's previous offending has involved spiking the drinks of their victims. Let's look at clothing and belongings. Security camera footage showed that KO was wearing black bootleg pants, a black jacket, black shoes, and a backpack. Her clothing, as well as her jewellery, which was these small crescent-shaped earrings and a small, delicate gold bead ring with a single pink stone, has never been found. 5 days after KO went missing, which would have been around Wednesday 16th of September 98, some of KO's possessions, including her day bag, passport and insurance papers, were found in a public rubbish bin on the corner of Albert Street and Swanson Street by a rubbish collector. The bins in the central city are emptied 2 to 3 times a day. So of course that means that they had to be put there extremely recently. In the cold case documentary, the series of events were described as the rubbish collector emptied the contents of the rubbish bin into a truck, property spilled out including KO's purse and passport. The collector took the passport back to the office where it sat before reports of KO's homicide hit the media. An office administrator contacted police after media reported an unidentified body being found. In Brian Bruce's documentary, The Investigator, the rubbish collector was described as finding KO's passport and insurance type papers and taking them home. Then police were contacted after media reported an unidentified body was found. So, we don't know which one. No additional fingerprints were found on the passport. As a result of the information, the police spent approximately 2 weeks sifting through the rubbish at Green Mound Landfill. Okay, so apparently there's another theory about drink spiking. The primary theory police seem to be pursuing now is that KO's drink was spiked. In the police's opinion, though, she wasn't a drinker of alcoholic drinks. Her friend Naomi said she could only drink a small amount. She couldn't even finish a bottle of beer. It's hard to imagine she'd be willing to drink unless someone forced her. However, Brian Bruce, in his documentary, the following conversation occurred with some of KO's friends. Asked, "Did KO always stick to the rules? Did she take drugs, for example?" "No," say her friends, "but she did like to have a drink." Her friend said she was describing a photograph where sharing a liquor and only a few glasses makes her drunken, and KO was so attractive, cute lady, so she was quite popular among men, and she can speak to everybody because her English capability is quite good, and in addition to it, she was a good dancer. Taking into account both statements, a sound conclusion to draw would probably be that KO would have been unlikely to visit a bar, like the one attached to the Centre Court building, unless she was with someone else. KO had just arrived off a midday flight. It's possible she went to the Centre Court food court for a late lunch. The building was advertised as having an international food hall and an observation deck. It's less likely but still possible that her drink or food could have been spiked there. At some point, KO ends up in the Centre Court stairwell, probably sometime that evening. People would be less likely to be leaving work via the stairwell after 5:30 or 6 p.m. But later into the night, the stairwell turned into the place for patrons from the tavern to smoke. So, the profile of the suspect has been described as having the confidence to go back to the scene, being confident or comfortable enough to approach a tourist, probably someone around Kayo's age, someone she was comfortable enough to stay with for 1 or 2 hours, and someone who looked trustworthy. Unless she had her drink spiked, but we don't know this. Forensically aware, there were no fingerprints on the belongings found in the rubbish bin, and apart from under Kayo's fingernails, no DNA was found. Someone who has probably been involved in an act like this before, being premeditated and having a sexual connotation behind their fending. People, including tourists visiting Auckland who were 20 in 1998, might have been visiting the QF Tavern or otherwise been on Queen Street on or around 11th September 98, who would be about 40 years old. The police want to hear from you if you have any information. Now, I'm going to put the numbers to call the police for Crime Stoppers and everything else in the description box below. In fact, if you have any info about any of the cases I cover on my channel, Crime Stoppers 0800 555 111, you can call the police on 105 or contact your local police station. Please visit our Facebook. We have a really great community there who love to share videos of the cases in New Zealand and get some support going. Please, if you can support me to have coffee, the $3 donation, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/nzmysteries, and please like and subscribe to the channel. The like's really important, guys, because it gets that this case just out there to so many more people, so I appreciate it. All this information is going to be in the description box below. Let's move on. Let's go to nzherald.co.nz. Police have new suspect in Japanese tourist cold case murder. And, you know, this was published back in 2018. Police have a new suspect in a 20-year-old cold case in which a Japanese tourist's decomposing body was found in the service closet of a central Auckland building. Following the cold case show, police revealed that they have a new suspect for the murder of Kayo Matsuzawa, and banking records show the suspect was in the immediate vicinity of where her body was found. However, police are remaining tight-lipped over the person of interest who used a bank card at a nearby BNZ ATM machine on September 11th, 98, the day that Kayo went missing. Auckland police were alerted to the suspect by another police district. Detective Inspector Scott Baird said to the Herald, "I'm not prepared to say what district or where we get information which might assist the homicide investigation." A new piece of evidence also came to light on the show after unknown male DNA was located under Kayo's fingernails. The 29-year-old was killed just hours after she arrived in Auckland. Again, her naked body was dumped in a utility cupboard in the Centre Court building on Queen Street. She had come to New Zealand in 97 to study English in Christchurch before, on September 11th, travelling to Auckland to explore the city. She checked into the Queen Street Backpackers, as we know, for 3 nights, and at 2:14 p.m. was filmed by CCTV cameras getting off a bus and crossing Queen Street. The grainy images are the last of her alive. 10 days later, her body was found in the cupboard. But Kayo's cause of death was actually never established, and the case went cold. However, Baird told the Herald he was encouraged by the level of interest shown by the public after the television show. He said, "We received more than 20 phone calls and emails from the program, and these will take some time to collate, assess, and work through. We have an obligation to her family to do our utmost to solve this, to give them answers," he said. So, we want to bring it back, and we want some more information. We want this shared, we want more information, we want more people to see it, we want more people to come forward. If you know anything about this case, please contact Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111 and let them know. It's been a long, long time, and her family deserve to have some answers. It is really, really horrible when someone from overseas comes over to New Zealand and this happens. It puts a stain on the name of New Zealand being so clean and green and great. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a great day, guys. See ya.